and to talk about Chagiga. All right. First of all, let me say that in the Torah, we speak about the fact that you have Shalosh Regalim, right? You have three times a year, which is supposed to make a pilgrimage festival to Yerushalayim. The Chag HaMatzos, the Chag HaShavuos, the Chag HaSukkos, right? Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, okay? Then it's written, Lo Yerufanai Rekam. Don't come in empty-handed. In other words, you have to bring korbanos with you. So our sages say that in reality there are two types of korbanos that the Torah is talking about. One is called Olas Re'iyah. Of course, Ola means a burnt offering. In other words, this sacrifice that you bring for the Re'iyah or the Ayon, in other words, to come and see, to be present at the Beis HaMikdosh, Lifnei Hashem, right? So this is a burnt offering. But then you also bring with you Shlomim. You bring with you peace offerings, because you have to enjoy a yontif. And how do you enjoy a yontif? You eat meat, you drink wine. I mean, these are the two basic ingredients of enjoyment, okay? So these are called the chagiga, okay? Or zivchei shlomim. All right, so now we see what Rashi is talking about. The chagiga says, im chol yom tov b'shabbos. Let's say that the first day of yontif occurs on Shabbos. Then in that case, dochin shalmei chagiga lemochor. Then in that case, we put off the shlomim that would be brought to celebrate the holiday for the following day. Sha'arei yesh lo tashlimim kol shiva. Because in the case of the shlomim, you have not just that one day, but you actually have a 7-day grace period within which to bring it. Okay? V'chein hakhel, and likewise this would apply to the principle of hakhel es ha'am, where it's written, you know, that shehoya b'shona rishona shel shemitah b'motzei yom tov, that after the year of Shemitah, at the conclusion of the first day of Sukkos, then they would set up, if you remember, right? Right, the Motzei Yom Tov, at the conclusion of the first day of Yom Tov, actually says the conclusion of the Yom Tov Achron, but that's a question, because if you take a look at the side, he says, no, it should really be Harishon. Okay, so it's a question of how, what the reading is. Okay, because it's written in the Torah, Miket Sheva Shanim, right, at the end of 7 years, Bimoej Nas HaMishtah, the holiday that occurs after the year of Shemitah. Huh? I'm in the Rashi to the Mishnah yet, where he goes and writes, Kedamin in Masechet Saita, because we learned in Masechet Saita, it says over there, Shehoya HaMelech Korei Matorah, Sefer Mishnah Torah, that the king would read in the Torah, the book of Devarim, right, which is also called the Mishnah Torah. The Chol Ha'am, and everybody is Chayovim Lavo. They're obligated to come, and the Hovi is Tapam, not only that they should come, but they have to bring their children, their wives, etc. Kedichsiv, because it's written in the Torah, Hakhel Es Ha'am, gather the people together, V'Hanoshim, V'Hanoshim Hataf, right? And he says, V'Shabbos Shabbos Yevshar, but you can't do it on Shabbos. And therefore you put it off until the following day. The Gemara Yerushalmi, and the Yerushalmi talking about this Mishnah Meforesh, it explains the Hodelo Abdidele V'Shabbos Mipnei Abina. Why don't we do it on Shabbos? Because the Bima, you know, the platform that has to be built, Kiritnan, as we have learned, Bima Shal Eitzo Yerushin Mamelech Ba'azora, that they would set up, that they would build literally a platform of wood for the king in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdosh, the Yoshev over there, and the king would sit on the platform over there, right? Farkin and Hossam. And then the Gemara and Yerushalmi asked the following question, the Yavda, the Esbol, why couldn't they have made it previously, right, the day before? Well, Mishalim, so the answer, the answer is because there were so many people in the courtyard that there wasn't time, wasn't room in order to do it. Okay. So, getting back to all these events, then we say that Zman Atzei Kahanim, Tishabam, Chagiva, Hakim, Achim, Akim. You have it the following day and not earlier. So now, the question is, Tishabam, Ardumi Puronis Lamechadim. Why couldn't we observe Tisha B'Av earlier than on Sunday? Why couldn't we observe it, for example, let's say on Thursday? Okay, move it up to Thursday. After all, the reading of the Megillah, we said, could be done in Kfarim, right? That they could begin reading it on Thursday instead. So why couldn't we apply the same rule to Tisha B'Av? So the Gemara says, no, when it comes to terrible things, you don't move it forward, you don't advance it.
It's all great calamity.
Right. Before the time, exactly. Now about Chagiga, the Hakil. So he says, Mishum da akati limot is bantriyuvayhu. In that case, the reason why we can't have either Chagiga or the Hakil earlier than, as we said, the day after the first day, if it's the first day is on Shabbos, it's because the time for when the Chiv is there hasn't yet come. Tana, we have a Baraisa which says, Chagiga v'cholzman Chagiga me'achmin. So he says, the Chagiga, in other words, what we said before about the sacrifice, and also the entire time of the Chagiga, you can push off, right? In other words, you can make it later. Meaning what? As we said before, in doing the Rashi, that what? That Rashi mentions the fact that you do have days in which you could make up if you didn't bring it on the first day. Okay? Not going now into a whole discussion, the difference between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel about this and so on. They were not 100% in agreement, okay? But at any rate, they're all in agreement that if you did not bring it on the first day, so you have time to bring it during the course of the week. And we'll discover that even in the case of Shavuos, you still have a 7-day grace period. So in other words, it's on this basis, by the way, that the Chassidim and the Eretz Yisrael, right, that they have this exactly. Because they talk about, they don't say, Tachnun, our custom is that when Shavuos is over, so we have one day of Yisroel, and then after that we go back again and say Tachnun. But Chassidim don't, and in Eretz Yisrael the custom is also not to, because they say you have Shivas Yimei Miluyim, right? So that in that case they count the day of Shavuos and then 6 days after that. Of course, don't forget that in Eretz Yisrael, Shavuos is only
one day,
that's all it is. So that day and the 6 days after, so they say, therefore we will not say any Tachnun during those days, because you could in days of old bring your Chagiga to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. Alright, getting back over here. Yes, Chagiga, Achman, right, so it says, Bishlam Chagiga. Yeah, okay, with Chagiga we understand the Mikla B'Shabbata, that if, you know, the first day when we should be bringing Chagiga happens on Shabbos, so Machin and the Vosa Shabbos, then we push it off until the day after Shabbos. Ela Zman Chagiga Mayhi. But what do we mean by the time of Chagiga? What is that? So Rav Moshe explains, he says, Ochiko Omar, this is what he said. He said, Chagiga B'Shabbos, the Eilas Re'iyah, Afilu B'Yomta. He says, not only the Chagiga do we push off on Shabbos, but also the Eilas Re'iyah we push off, Afilu B'Yomta, even on the first day of Yomta, this Man Chagiga B'Achmin, because we can make the time for the bringing of the Chagiga a little later. So he says, Mani, whose opinion are you citing over here? So he says, Beis Shammai. He says, it's Beis Shammai. Ditnan, the Din Shlomim B'Yom Tov, V'Yen Somcha Lehem. Beis Shammai holds that you bring Shlomim on Yom Tov, but you're not allowed to be to practice Smicha on them. What do we mean by smicha? Smicha means that when you offer a donation, you give an offering to the Beis HaMikdash, you know, a korban, whatever type of korban it may be, then what do? Then you have to put your hands with all your bodily strength on top of the head of the animal. Because the Sabach is Yodeh al Rosh Ho'ela, right? Sabach Yodeh al Rosh, this, that, and so on and so forth, you know, depending upon what is the korban. Okay. So, according to Beis Shammai, the Mevi'in Shlomim, that the Beis Shammai says that you are allowed to bring Shlomim on Yom Tov, but you're not allowed to practice smicha on the antenna.
Right.
But Avol Lo Olos, and you're not allowed to bring the Olas, you know, the burnt offering, that you cannot bring. Beis Hillel Omrim, but Beis Hillel says, Mevi'in Shlomim V'Olos B'Sofron Lehem. Beis Hillel is very liberal, it says, in this particular case. So they say, yes, not only can you bring Shlomim, you can also bring Olos, and you can put your hands on them. What is, first of all, the problem with Smicha? The problem with Smicha is that you're not allowed to lean upon an animal to support yourself. You have to be able to to stand on your own when it comes to a Yontem, with a Shabbos. Okay. But why the distinction that Beis Shammai makes between Shlomim and Olas, where they say that Shlomim you can bring and Olas you can't bring? So the answer is this. Shlomim, in the final analysis, they say you can bring, because after all, on a Yom Tov, you are permitted to shecht an animal if you need it in order to have a festive meal. That you're permitted to do, okay? Whereas an Ola, it's not a festive meal, it's going to be burnt. So in that case, it's not proper to bring it yourself, right? Look, Beis Hillel obviously disagrees and says it can bring both of them. Okay. Rava Amar, Rava said that Chagiga, Goldsman Chagiga, Ma'achrin, the Feilah, he says, all right. When he's talking about the time that they give for Chagiga, it means what we already said, that you can delay it. In other words, you can have it afterwards, the Achrin, right? But the Feilo, but you cannot do it indefinitely. In other words, there is a time wherein it is permitted to bring, even if you can't bring it on the first day. But once that time is gone, then in that case you can't do it. This is why we talk about the Shiva Simei Miluyim. In other words, you have a period of 7 days in order to bring it, and therefore you have, in other words, 6 days after the day of the Yontif. However, in the Gemara in Sukkah, and yeah, we'll see in a second, okay, that there's also a slight disagreement with this, okay? The Tanan, because we have learned, says, Mi shalom chag b'yontov harishon shal chag. If a person did not bring his korban on the first day, and here chag means not any holiday, but it means of Sukkot specifically, the first day of Sukkot, then chaygeg v'holeich, it's kol haregel kule. Then in that case, he could bring it throughout the days of the festival of Sukkot. The Yom Tov Ha'achron Shel Chag. And also he could bring it on the last day of Yom Tov, which of course would be Shmini Atzeres. He could still bring it on Shmini Atzeres. Of course, there is a problem with Shmini Atzeres, but let me just finish this quotation first. Over HaRegel, if the holiday passed below Chag, and he did not, you know, bring the Korban Chagigo, then in that case, Eino Chai Bachi Yaso, then he has no further obligation. It doesn't mean that he gets credits, it means he gets demerits. But he can't bring it after the assigned time. Okay. Now I said. Yeah. All right. The question is right about the role of Shmini Atzeres. Okay. Shmini Atzeres is considered a Yontub of Nei Atzmo. Okay. It's a holiday all by itself. And nevertheless, the question is, what is its relation to Sukkot? So in certain respects, it's independent of Sukkot, and in other respects, It's not independent. It's independent from Sukkot in that what? We don't sit in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, at least, you know, if you live in Yerushalayim, in Eretz Yisrael, you don't, okay? Because they're told to sit how many days in the Sukkah? Shivas Yomim.
Right.
What we do over here, some follow the ruling that you still eat your meals, but you're not allowed to, you know, to make a bracha in the Sukkah, okay? You know, Leish Shiva Sukkah, that definitely is out. And others, they'll make a token visit to the Sukkah, and then they'll say, okay, hopefully I'll see you next year, but in the meantime, they will be eating Sukkahs in the Sukkah made out of the skin of Lepyosin, okay? That's what we say in Shmini Atzeres, okay? So, from that point of view, it's separate. It's separate from the point of view that instead of saying, you know, Yom HaKa Sukkos HaZeh, what do we say? We say, Yom Shmini Atzeres HaKa HaZeh. Versions differ as to what we say, okay? But we still add in both cases that it's still in Zaman Simchat Chedem. So that there is one opinion, a minority opinion, that says if you made a mistake on Shmini Atzeres and you said Yom Chakasukas HaZeh, you don't have to actually, you know, start the Shmini Atzeres all over again. There is such an opinion. But of course, we have to be careful not to, because it's really, it's no longer Sukkot. Okay. But as we see, of course, we know Lulav and Esrog, definitely that's out too. I mean, we don't use them anymore on Shmini Atzeres. No question about that. However, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, since people were coming in for Shmini Atzeres, they gave them one more day as a makeup day for the Chagiga. And if they weren't able to bring it any time prior to that, then they could still bring it on Shmini Atzeres. So that's what the Mishnah that they quote over here says. Yes?
The Chagiga has nothing to do with the order of the sacrifices that were on Sukkot that would go in a descending order. That was already right.
See, that's what the Torah has to tell us, you know, that you know, you have to bring so many oxen and so many sheep and so many this and how many goats and so on and so forth, right? And how much wine and how much the mincha has to be and so forth in that connection, okay? So that is the responsibility of the tzibor. That comes out of the tzibor and, you know, the Beis HaMikdash, they are performing all the rituals over there on behalf of the entire community of Israel. But on the Yom Tovim, you know, the Sholosh Regalim, people would bring their own in order to rejoice in the festival. And why? Because it's written, Samachta b'chagecha. You see, you are to rejoice on your festival. And Samachta b'chagecha means, therefore, you know, that you have to feast and drink and so forth in order to feel good. Tomorrow afterwards in Sukkah, they ask the question, you know, a different question, okay?
There must be a relation that tradition of what Greg just enjoyed in the Catskills.
I didn't know that Greg was in the Catskills. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
There is a Gemara that asked the question, you know, how can you right? And then afterwards, and so on and so forth. So how can you how do you reconcile the two versions over there? So the answer is, half of it has to be for you spiritually, the yontif, right? And half should be physically to enjoy yontif, okay? In other words, when you have a yontif, you should eat, you should drink, you should enjoy yontif, but don't neglect also Torah. That's also part of the joy of yontif as well, okay? All right. Now let's continue over here, at least try to get to the bottom over here. Yeah. Rabashi Omar, Rabashi said, Chagiga v'chotzman Chagiga me'achmin, right? And he says, you know, that the Chagiga, in other words, bringing the Korban Chagiga and also the time given for it, is always, you can bring it later. Ba'afilu atzeres, and here's we have you then. Even remember that atzeres in the language of the Chachomin means Shavuos. And even Shavuos, the Chad Yoma, which is only one day, ma'achrin. Even then, you are permitted, you know, to bring the Korban that you normally would be bringing on the first day, bringing on Shavuos itself, can bring them later. Ditnan, as we have learned, the Mishnah which says modim, they are in agreement. Sheim chol atzeres liyos b'Shabbos, that if Shavuos happens to occur on Shabbos, sheyom tibuach achar haShabbos, that the day of the slaughtering of the animal comes after Shabbos. Sounds almost like what we say every Shabbos, right? The conclusion of the Masechus Brochus and several other places.
Yeah.
Right. So he says, Rabbi, not on the Tia Bukurim. He said, you know what? He says, Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, he actually planted a planting on Purim. All right, we'll wait a moment. Okay, right. The Rochatz Bekrono Shel Tzipori, the Shiva Asabat Thomas. And you know what else Rabbi Yehuda Anossi did? He says he took a bath, he bathed in the Karon of Tzipori, of Sepphoris, on the 17th day of Thomas. So, first of all, the question is, what is Karono Shel Tzipori? Because this, it's not clear. Normally in Hebrew, what does the word Karon mean? It means a wagon. It means a wagon. Well, obviously, you don't go bathing in the wagon. You understand? So therefore, Rashi explains to Karon Shel Tzipori, he says, B'yom HaShuk. In other words, he says that Karon means that's the day upon which people bring in their wagons to sell in the market, you know, to sell the goods in the market. So in other words, he bathed B'far Hetzion, right? Openly. At the time, B'shas Hiluch Karonos, the time when the wagons were coming in, right? Tosfos on the opposite side, it says Rochas Bikrona Shatzvoi, he says Lav Tavka Bikrona, he says Elo, it says not really that, but in other words Koloma to say B'fai Hesya, all that they want to say is that the word Korona means B'fai Hesya, openly. V'yim Tomar Ma'yirei Olechotz Afilu Le'echol Nami Mutar. And if you say his boss, I mean, so he decided that he would be bathing on the Shavuos Batamis. He was even willing to eat on Shavuos Batamis. He felt it was permitted. Kiritanya Rosh Hashanah, as we have learned in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Ches, over there where it says, Ein Tzara, if there is, well, first of all, we said, you know, if there is Shalom, then you don't have to observe the fast, right? If there is Tzara, you do. And what if it's Ein Tzara, Ein Shalom? If it's a time which is, you know, it's neither one nor the other, it's not good and it's not bad, right? Then the Gemara said over there, Ratzu Misanin, La Ratzu E Misanin. The Gemara said over there, Rosh Hashanah, that if they felt like it, they fast. They didn't feel like it, then they didn't fast. So, the Yesh Lomar now comes to Tosfos and he says, yeah, okay, good. But, the Kevon and the Kibluhu, Kivor Avosenu Al Atzmon, inasmuch as our ancestors already accepted the fact that they are going to fast, then Mistama Gamhem Kibluhu. Then in that case, we have to assume that others at the time of Rabbi also did it. So what Rabbi was doing was because, you know, he was consistent with his point of view, but others did not accept his point of view. Okay.
But the question to you, the time of Rabbi, the time's been so good over
here. Right. Now, well, Bikesh, of course, you know, Rabbi lived in a time of free Mammon. Beis HaMikdash had been destroyed.
Right.
The Romans were ruling Eretz Israel.
Right.
But it so happened that Rabbi was very friendly with the Roman government. He was very friendly with them. And so, therefore, apparently, the oppression of the Romans was not too bad at this particular time. This is why, you know, it says, you know, Ein Tzara Ein Shalom. So therefore, you know, he said, okay, if you feel like it, you do it, if not, not. Okay. But not, needless to say, you know, during the generations, we have not accepted that point of view, as Tosfos just pointed out. Okay. And one other thing. Well, Bikesh Larko Tisha B'Av. And he even wanted to uproot Tisha B'Av below Hodulah. But the rabbis did not agree with this. All right, I just want to conclude now with the Tosfos that we have on the side over there, Bikesh Darko Tisha B'Av, and with that we'll call it a night. He wanted to uproot Tisha B'Av, and they did not agree. He says, kosher, says Tosfos. Difficult for me. Why? Heichi Salka Dati, the high Tana, Rabbi, how could you even imagine that this great Tana, Rabbi, right, would want to uproot Tisha B'Av completely? The Amrinan, didn't we say in the Gemara in Tainus, it says, Kol ho'eichel v'sheisa b'Tisha B'Av, einero b'nechama shel Yerushalayim. Whoever eats and drinks on Tisha B'Av will not, you know, be worthy to see how Yerushalayim is going to be rebuilt and sold by the Rebbeinu Shalom. The Yod, and again, the Ho in Bezdin Yochel Levatel Divrit Bezdin Chavera. Not only that, but if you remember, we had a principle, remember this, we already had, you know, at the beginning of this Pesachta, right, that one Bezdin cannot come and cancel the ruling of a previous Bezdin, right? Elim Kane, unless Kotel Mehemene Bechok Meminyon, unless the second Bezdin is greater than the earlier one, both in wisdom and in numbers.
Who determines that?
Well, remember, I've told you several times, I mean, that the Reform say that they are the biggest in the country, right? The conservatives say we have so many hundreds and thousands and so on and so forth, so that we are greater and therefore we have the ability, you know, to set aside, etc., etc. Yeah, so Chokhmah, you know, they say we have university degrees, and the Alter Rabbanim didn't have university degrees, and so on and so forth. Well, obviously, that doesn't come by us, right?
They can cancel, change our thoughts.
Yeah. If they're looking for justification, they don't need justification. They do what they want. Okay.
Not that they claim they can do so. They've done so.
Right. They definitely. So, okay, so this was another objection raised by Tosfos. So he says, Yeshlomar, so therefore we have to say that Yeshlomar usually gives an answer. Tosfos asks, you know, asks a question, points out a difficulty, and then tries to come to a conclusion. So he says, Yeshlomar, the lo ratzel okro, elam echumra sheyesh bo yosem mishot hanius. He did not want to uproot Tisha B'Av, except that the chumras, which have, you know, more than the other fasts, right? He wanted to ease up on the other chumras. Okay, inami, maybe also yesh lomar, the rotzer la'akro mitshihi. Maybe he wanted to uproot it from the ninth day of the month of Av. And make it instead on the 10th day. Kedomer Rav Yochanan, as Rav Yochanan said, Yilo Havai Hosum Kvatir Basiri. We learned in Gemara in Tanis, if you remember. The Beis Hamikdash.
Right.
When did they set fire to the building of the Beis Hamikdash? It was on the 9th of Av towards evening. Okay? Right. And then it continued to burn throughout the night until the 10th day. So therefore there was an opinion that said we should really be observing not the 9th but the 10th. So maybe this is what it means, that Rabbi wanted to uproot it, in other words to change the date of the fast of Tisha B'Av from the 9th to the 10th.
Well, some of that still holds once you don't get the haircut.
That's absolutely right. We still that until
we don't eat meat
after. Right, until afternoon on the 10th of Av, we still observe the chumras of not eating meat, not taking a haircut, not doing laundry, not until after that time.
Afternoon.
Noon, of course, would be roughly after 1 o'clock. Or so,
after of the 10th.
Because we're on daylight.
Isn't it 1:20 thereabouts?
Yes, on the 10th.
Isn't it about 1:20?
Yeah.
I
would have to look up actually to see when is sunrise and when is sunset and determine. I say only roughly after 1 o'clock, but in reality it would probably be a few minutes more than that. Right. Thank you. I forgot what day it is already. My mind is on Tisha B'Av. Okay, tonight is July the 11th in the year 2001. We shall continue right now in Maseches Megillah, where we left off last week. We are on Daf Hei Amud Beis. The last recording that you heard was the Tosfos, which we read, wherein we learned that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi wanted to la'akor Tisha B'Av, which literally would mean to uproot Tisha B'Av. And therefore we saw that, what is the meaning of it? Does it mean that he wanted to abolish it altogether? Maybe, but that's not the way Tosfos understands it. Because Tosfos, if you remember, which we read, we saw that there are various objections to this theory. One objection is that, Steich, how could he abolish something that an earlier Beis Din had already established? But we learned that a Beis Din cannot abolish a din or an edict or something of a previous Beis Din unless it is superior to it in number and in wisdom and so on. Secondly, another explanation was given that maybe what he wanted to do was to change the fast of Tisha B'Av from the 9th of Av to the 10th of Av, because the basic reason being, as we learned in Gemara and Tainus, that when the Romans set fire to the Beis HaMikdash, actually it was towards evening of the 9th, and then fire continued all night long, and this is the reason why he felt that maybe the 10th would be a more appropriate date for it. So this is what we had in the Tosfos. Alright, so now getting back, it's written first of all at the end of the second line on the page over there. It says, "Velo hodulo," which means that the sages did not agree with him. In other words, they opposed the idea of abolishing Tisha B'Av. Obviously, to us, Tisha B'Av is a very, very sad day, and we feel that it has to be observed by Jews. And so, therefore, this being the case, they did not agree with him. So, Omar lefon of Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda. So, Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda said, "Rabbi, Rabbi, lo kacho yamasin. This is not really what it should be." He says, "Ela Tisha B'Av shechol yos b'Shabbos haba." He says, "No." He says, "We're dealing with a special case." What was the special case? Special case, he says, was that on the 9th day of the month of Av, it happened to occur when on Shabbos, and of course we saw in the Mishnah that what, we're not allowed to fast on Tisha B'Av on Shabbos. Of course, what did the Mishnah tell us? That Machrin, in other words, you put it off for a day so that you do the fast on the Sunday, right? But maybe this was not what was in the mind of Rabbi. So he says, Tisha B'Av shechol yos b'Shabbos, and l'haba, it was, v'dachinuhu le'achar Shabbos, and then they pushed it off until after Shabbos. The Yomar Rabbi, so Rabbi said, ho'il v'nitcha, look, inasmuch as we've already pushed off the fast of Tisha B'Av, yidoche, then in that case, all right, let's push it off. In other words, if it's cancelled, it's cancelled, right? This is what he's saying. V'lo hodul chachomim, and the chachomim did not agree with him. Kori ale, so when this testimony was given by Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda, so they applied unto him the verse which says, it's a verse of course in Kehelis, and it says, Togim ashnayim minhu echad, that two are better than one. What does it mean? How do they apply it in this particular case? The answer is, it's good that we had two different people who are able to support the idea that even though he was in favor perhaps of postponing or putting it off or something, but the sages did not agree with that. So now we have further confirmation, and that's why it says Tov Nashtayim in Nechayecha. Good evening. Okay, so now we continue. On the previous page, they mentioned that Rebbe did certain things that scandalized the Chachamim. One of them we learned was about Tisha B'Av, right? That he wanted to push it off. But another thing that they mentioned that he did is that Nota Netia. What did he do? He planted a planting, but Purim, on Purim. So how could Rebbe do something like that? The Hotni Rav Yosef. Didn't Rav Yosef teach the following? It says, in the Megillah, it's written that what? That Purim is to be a day of Simcha, Umishta, the Yom Tov, okay? And he defines them. What does he mean? What do we mean by Simcha? So he says Simcha means Melameh Shasurim Behesped. Okay, it means that on Purim we're not allowed to make any hesped because it has to be a day of rejoicing, not a day of sadness. All right, so that's how he defines Simcha. Now how about Mishteh? So it says Mishteh. This teaches us what Melameh Shasur Betanis. This is a day upon which we are obligated to eat and to drink, to feast, right? So in that case, what does it teach us? It teaches us then that it is prohibited to fast on Tisha B'Av, okay?
Purim.
On Purim, excuse me. You're right. Wait, I still have Tisha B'Av on my mind. Okay. The Yom Tov. What does that mean? It says, Malabi, this teaches us she'osu ba'asiyas melacha. The fact that they call Purim a day of Yom Tov means that it is prohibited to do work on this day. Nu. Okay. All right. So, if that's the case, what is Rebbe doing? We're not questioning about the fact, you know, whether it was a hesped. No, we're not accusing Rebbe of violating that. We're not accusing Rebbe of fasting on the day. But what are we accusing Rebbe of doing on that day? That he did malacha. He did work which should not be done. Right. So now they try to explain how come that Rebbe decided to do something like that on Purim itself. So there are different explanations that are going to be given. Okay. Explanation number one. Explanation number one is that Rabbi, he was Bar Abbas Ahava, right? He was a person who observed Purim when? On the 14th of Adar, right? Bechinota, so when was he planting? It was Bachemes Adota. He planted it on the 15th. Okay? So the Gemara question is, it says, Eini? How can you tell me such a maisim? Rabbi was at that particular time in Tveria. Utveria, Mukevas Chomim Moshe Shum Binun Havai. And Tveria was a city which was surrounded by a wall from the very days of Yehoshua bin Nun, right? Now, of course, the problem over here is this. Where do we find that Tveria was in existence in the time of Yehoshua? It certainly wasn't. But there was another place that was conquered by Yehoshua that existed in that place. And afterwards, when Tveria was built, actually it was built by Herod, okay, in order to give honor to Tiberius Caesar, okay? So as a result, you know, that's why they call it Tveria, right? Yeah. Pardon me? They changed the name, but the chances are that they also built a new city on the area, the location. Okay. But at any rate, they're trying to identify Tveria as being a very, very ancient city, and they date it back to the days of Joshua. We'll see in a moment how they get it, how they derive that particular thing. All right. But right now the question is about Rabbi, right? Was he a person who observed Purim on the 14th and worked on the 15th? Okay, with that we wouldn't have such a quarrel, right? But now they say the Harabi, but Tveria Hava, right? He was in Tveria. Tveria, as we said, is a city which was surrounded by a wall from the days of Joshua. El Rabbi, so we have to say Rabbi Bar Chamisa Hava. He was a person who celebrated Purim on the 15th, right? Which would fit in with the area if it's a walled city, right? The Chinota, so when did he plant? He planted it by Besahava, right? It was on the 14th, okay? So in other words, what? At this particular point, they are justifying Rabbi on the basis that either he observed the 14th, in which case, when was the planting? It was on the 15th, or he was a person who observed Purim on the 15th, and when he planted, he was planting on the 14th. So it shows that how many days actually do we have to refrain from work? 1 or 2 days. The answer is only the one day that we are celebrating Purim, but not the other. This is the way it would seem. It comes out at this moment, right? Okay. So, we continue. All right. So now they say, Amip Shitalei that the very Makavis Haimim Moshe Yeshua bin Nun. Now, is it so clear to you, he says, that the Deria was a city which was surrounded by a wall even in the days of Yeshua bin Nun? No, not so. We have a great scholar by the name of Chizkiyah, Kori B'Tiberia Barveso V'Chamesa. He was in Tiberia, and he read the Megillah both on the 14th and also on the 15th. Okay? Why? Why did he read the Megillah 2 days, the 14th and the 15th? Because B'Sapkelei, he was in doubt, Imu Kefes Chayma B'Mos Yeshua B'Nun, he, right, whether this was a city taka which was surrounded by a wall in the days of Joshua, Elo, or not. So the Gemara comes and it says, no, okay, Lechizkiyah Misapkale. Okay, as far as Lechizkiyah is concerned, okay, he had his doubts about the Viria. But the Rabbi, as far as Rabbi is concerned, Bishitale. It was clear to him. He knew that it was, you know, that Tiberia actually then was surrounded by a wall in those days. So now the Gemara asks a different question. All right. Granted that it was clear to him, you know, that in Tiberia they should observe Purim when? On the 15th, right? But, Mishore, is it really permitted in such a case to work on the 14th? The Hawks, if the Megillah's sign is, don't we find written in Megillah's Titus? I remember when we studied the Gemara Titus, we learned that there was an ancient collection of different events, various days in the calendar. It's called Megillah's Titus because on these particular days you're not allowed to fast. Okay, that's why it was called Megillah's Titus. All right. And from time to time it was quoted in the Gemara in Titus. This particular quotation is quoted. It's certain, Es Yom Arba Osor, both the 14th day of Adar, the Es Yom Chamisho Osor, and also the 15th day of Adar, Yomei Purio Inun. They are days of Purim, the Lola Mispeit Bahon, and you're not allowed to make any hesped on these days. The Yomar Rava, and Rava came and he said, he says, why do we have this? It's to tell us that if you observe one, you are still prohibited from doing it on the others, and if you observe the other day, you are prohibited from doing it on the first day. In other words, according to Megillah's Titus, how many days do we have to observe as days of feasting, of rejoicing, etc., etc., and not the moon? Both the 14th and the 15th. So, as we see, it's still a shaila about what? How come Rebbe planted a planting on whichever day it was that he was observing, you know, you understand? Of course, as we said before, that if he was observing the 14th, then it would be the 15th that he was planting, or vice versa. Okay, if he observed the 15th, then why was he planting on the 14th? When Megillah's Titus says he should not do any, you know, both of these days are days of Simcha, etc., etc. Okay? So he says, Han imile behesped with Titus. He says, okay, what it says in Megillah's Titus, it says, these refer to making a hesped or fasting, that both on the 14th and on the 15th day, they are prohibited. Okay? Abal melacha. But when it comes to doing work, yom echad v'sulo. One day is sufficient to do what? To refrain from work in celebration of Purim, right? And you don't have to do more than that. V'sulo means and not more than that. Okay? Good. So far, so good. Okay? All right. I'd like to do some Tosfos with you again, because Tosfos is very, very interesting. Okay. We'll start with the third. We already did the first two Tosfos on the page, you know, on the side. Those I have recorded in the tape, okay? So now we'll take a look at the next couple of the Tosfos. Tosfos, first of all, says Shasur Behesped. This is what he wants to discuss, the fact that these days it is prohibited from making a hesped. If a person passes away, you don't give a funeral oration on that day. All right? So Tosfos now is questioning a comment of Rashi. He says, Heshev Rashi, he says, Rashi has the following question. He says, V'chi minotzan koyach limei Megillas Esther l'tchoyz havelas. He says, where do we see, or where can we find that the Megillas Esther gives permission that we should postpone or push aside, in other words, let's say, you know, not to engage in mourning on Purim, okay? E Isa, the Behesped Nesar, if we say that the reason is that it is prohibited to make a Hesped, Mishum Nesir, because it's written, Yimei Mishte V'Simcha, right? That these are to be days of feasting and joy. The Ruch HaZinon, but we see what? The Chulei Alman Agrabei Heter, that everybody, as a matter of fact, is they're permitting themselves to do what? To make hespeds. Okay? Elavadai loy havelin and shein nofnapadayim. So therefore he says, well, if that's the case, then we have to say, what is this whole business? The business is that on both the 14th and the 15th of Adar, we're only concerned about not to recite Tachnun. Okay, nothing up for them. Literally, they fall upon their face. Tachlun is referred to as the filas apayim, because originally people actually used to prostrate themselves when they would recite Tachlun. Okay, of course we don't do it anymore. We simply do it symbolically, you know. Okay, all right. The lohave yom tzora, because it was not a day of tzora. Ela yom simcha. For this reason, therefore, we don't say this. Well, I'll tell you. This remind, of course, what Tosfos is really trying to say is as follows. Both days are prohibited, right, from having a hesped. Nevertheless, because the Megillah doesn't really single out that particular aspect, so that therefore the Olam has already taken upon itself to recite hesped. So what I wanted to say, this reminds me of rabbis who, unfortunately, as we would say, Rachmana Litzlan, they had to officiate at a funeral on Purim. If they are strict, then what happens? Huh? No, they won't postpone the funeral, because that already, the burial of the dead person takes precedence if it is, you know, not talking about on the Shabbos or something like that. But if it's a weekday, definitely it takes precedence, okay?
So they say you're not allowed to make the eulogy in the meantime.
That's what they say. They say,
in the meantime, they
right, we are not allowed to eulogize a person, but nevertheless, how can I let such an important person pass away without saying a few words about, etc., etc., and so on? Okay, so we see that this is not a modern American invention, but already it goes back to the days of Facebook. In other words, it's a good almost 1,000 years old. Okay.
There's no shiva. I mean, the count is a day, but you don't go to sit.
Well.
And I mean, no shiva.
Yeah. Technically, I guess a person should sit shiva on Purim too, because it's not one of the major holidays. Nevertheless, the fact is that permission is given to do what? To go to the shul and or the reading the Megillah. So if you're going to do that, so we already stretch it a little bit further, you know. Yeah, that's correct.
Then you're going to go to the house and to
Nachmanides. Right. Okay.
There was a instance when Rashi was the leader of the community. Somebody passed away on Sukkot, and obviously they couldn't sit shiva on Sukkot. But the family still said shiva, and somebody told Rashi that them to sit shiva.
Not allowed to sit shiva, actually, on Yom Tov. Not even the Chol HaMoed you're not allowed. Yeah.
Right, so Rashi basically overruled himself and said he underestimated how his family is actually taking this loss at the Avelis family, even though it was young.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a very difficult situation that you mentioned, Greg, and I'll tell you why. By the reform, it doesn't make any difference because what do they observe? They don't observe anything anyway. They may have some kind of a service in the house for one or two nights and call it a morning, you know. According to the strict law, okay, you're not allowed to sit Shiva either on Yom Tov or even on Chol HaMoed. Not even on Chol HaMoed, okay? What happens if Chas V'Sholom somebody passes away and you weren't able to bury that person before Yom Tov or to observe any Avelis before Yom Tov? And in that case, you have to wait until after Yom Tov. You're allowed an extra day because, you know, particularly we observe, you know, an eighth day of Pesach, so, or a ninth day, you know, Simchas Torah, so you get credit for that. It's a day, even though you don't sit Shiva, but you get a credit already for a day then. Okay. But then after that you have to sit down and you have to mourn. This is the proper way. When my father-in-law, the Bisholom, passed away, there was no question. He passed away, it happened to be Shabbos Chol HaMoed, Pesach was the very first day. On Sunday the burial took place, there was no hesped, no nothing, even though he was a man who certainly deserved the hesped. He was a very, very wonderful personality, from, he observed everything, and he was zogot and zolait, as we say, right? But when did the family sit Shiva? So they sat Shiva after Pesach was over, you see. So that's the way it should be observed. However, the conservative have come out now with a heter. They say, inasmuch as people anyway want to get it over with as fast as possible, okay, putting it not exactly in their words, but this is the idea, okay, so that therefore they sit Shiva on Chol HaMoed and they can't store Shiva. So this is one of the changes that they made. So this is what you said about Rashi. I don't know, I have never come across that, but what you say about Rashi, you know, it reminds me of what the conservatives are now declaring, that this is official policy. Pardon me? In the biography of Rashi? No.
I'll have to look it up sometime.
Yeah. Those who really observe Chol HaMoed as Chol HaMoed have less inclination to sit Shiva than those who don't. I think this has something to do.
Yeah. Maybe. Maybe. Yeah. What? And when I say a full week, remember, I said that you get credit for one day, the last day of Yom Tov, that you get credit for, okay? So that after that, there are five full days yet, and then the very last day, Shiva anyway, the law is that the Sid Shah Achaz, literally it means 1 hour, but it doesn't even require sitting an hour. You make some sort of avelis, you sit down for a few minutes, and then you get up from Shiva, and we say on that particular case that Miktsas Yoim Kechulayim, in other words, that part of the day of observance already is considered as if it was a complete day. So it would mean then that you would observe five full days of Shiva yet. Okay? That's the way it works. All right. Now let's get back over here. Yes, I told you that I wanted to do one more Rashi. Okay? That's, one more Tosfos. All Rabbi B'Tveria Hava. It says, Rabbi was in Tveria. Now we know that in general, this was not the place where he was. Where was Rabbi normally? The answer is he was normally in Yavne. Normally he was in Yavne. So what was he doing in Tveria? This is what the question is over here. Right. So anyway, Tosfos says, Nira, it seems to me, he says, Shehoyu B'nei Antoninus, that it happened to be in the days of Antoninus. Antoninus Pius was the Roman emperor, and Rabbi was very close to the emperor and to the Roman consuls and so on. So, therefore, Kishehoyu Yachad, because we see that they used to fraternize together. As a matter of fact, they would even eat a meal together. Okay? The Gemara has, tells us about it in the Maseches Aveda Zara. That what? That one of the things that Rabbi wanted to do is Sherotza Leshachre B'nei Tveria Mimas. He wanted to free the citizens of Tveria from the tax that the Roman government had imposed upon them. Because why? Because the people in Tveria, they were Talmidei Chachamim. So that he said that he wanted to make Tveria a colonia. Colonia, of course, but you know, it's like the Latin word colonia, which means a colony, or in other words, a Roman settlement. So apparently, from this, I gather that Roman citizens in general were free of a special tax, but there must have been a special tax imposed upon the Jews. So what Rabbi tried to do, because of his friendship for Antoninus, for the Roman government, was to have the people of Tveria freed from the special tax imposed by the Roman government. All right. Now to get back to the text again, where we left off. Okay. All right. Let's do the last line that we did before. All right. Is, you know, that Rava said that it's not not required. You know, that person who observes one day is prohibited from doing work in the other place, you know, and vice versa. He says, Hani mila behesperutinus. These restrictions apply to Hesper and Tanis, as we said before. And as Tosfos says, we don't say Tachtan on those days, of course, to this very day. We don't say Tachtan on, on either Purim or Shushan Purim. Avol melacha, but when it came to work, so he said, Yom Echot Vesula. You observe one day when you don't do work, and that's it, no more. So the Gemara says, Eini, Taka Zoi, is this well? I'll give you a different story. Vehar Rav, of course, don't forget, Rav lived in Babylonia, okay? Rav, Chazre Vahu Gavro, he saw a certain person. What was he doing? He was sowing seeds of flax near Kitna. Of course, he recognized that it has a relationship to our English word cotton. Okay? But it means flax, according to Rashi and according to all the other authorities. Okay? So he was sowing flax on Purim. And what did he do? He cursed them. And because of his curse, the Lord Somach Kitne. So the result was that this person's flax did not grow because of the curse put upon him by Rav. So the Gemara tries to explain this story. It says, Hasum by Yomahava. It says, well, in that case, we're talking about a person who was actually doing work. Right? Sowing the on Purim itself. That's why he cursed them. Rabba Bereda Rava, Rabba, who is the son of Rava, Omar, he says, Afilu Tema Biyomei. Even if you say in that very day, Hespe Vitanis Kabil Alayim. Okay, you know, the Jews in Shushan, at the time of Esther and Ahasuerus, they accepted the idea that they would not recite any hesped, nor would they fast, right? As we said before, right? You may simcha mishta, right? But melacha lo kabil alayo, they did not take upon themselves not to do work. Demi yikora, because we have two different psukim in the Megillah. First it says, Ksiv, Simcha Mishneh V'yomtov. It says that Purim is to be a day of Simcha, right? Mishneh and Yomtov. And we explained all three of them, you know, as referring, you know, not to have hesped, and not to fast, and not to do work. Philip Sof, but when it comes around again, what does the Megillah say? Ksiv, it's written as follows, La Sosasam, that the Jews are to make these days of Ador, Yimei Mishteh V'Simcha, right? That to make them days of feasting and of rejoicing, right? The Yilu Yom Tov Loksiv, but you don't find in the second version what? The word Yom Tov. In other words, then, that shows that even the Jews of Shushan, they decided that for the future, they would be permitted to work on Purim. Okay? The Yellow Rav, so if that's the case, if work was accepted, right, that it should be permitted to be done on Purim, so how about Rav? My Tama Latya Nahu Gavra? So tell me, why did Rav then curse the man that he saw sowing the, the seeds of flax? So the answer that they give is as follows. Gemara says, the Vorim Amutorim V'Achareim Nogben Isur Hava. It says, there is a situation where you may be permitted to do something, but everybody else does not agree with that, but they refrain from doing it. Okay? Let me give a simple illustration. Problem always arises when a person, let's say, who lives in Chutz La'aretz, right? Lives in America, Europe, wherever he may be living, any place outside of Eretz Yisrael. He goes to Eretz Yisrael and comes a yontif. What do you do in that case? Well, all right. Obviously, the people in Eretz Yisrael, they're doing things because they don't observe the second day yontif. You understand? What is he to do? So, technically, he could do like the place where he is, right? Technically. In other words, he could do something on the second day of Yontif, but we say nothing doing. It's not right. He should not be doing anything, and therefore he has to observe privately, all the things that are prohibited to him. As a matter of fact, whenever I go to Israel for Pesach, I make a second Seder, right? And I try to find a minyan of people who are chutz la'aretz so that we could daven a yontif, they could daven on the second day of yontif and not the chol hamoed davening, or if it's, let's say, shmini shel pesach, which everybody observes, right? But what do you do with the shmini shel pesach, the eighth day of Pesach? So, you look for a minyan to try to find its own, or else if you can't make a minyan, by you observe yontif, but you don't, try to to cast aspersions upon the people who are doing their normal thing. Okay. Of course, now they take the opposite. Right. The opposite is more serious. Because it's more serious. We've had people, and we still have people, they come from Eretz Yisrael, and Datum Nasar, they have the intention in their mind that they're going back to Israel. Okay? What do they do when we observe 2 days Yontif? This is a perennial problem, right? They come here to America, they come here to Springfield, and what should they do? Huh? That's what they're supposed to do. Why? Because this is the case that we're talking about over here. In other words, they should not do openly, right? They should not do openly something that would be permitted to them when everybody else is observing an Isser. You understand? By us, it's Yontif, we don't do any work, and so they should not be doing something before Hesia, in other words, openly, which violates our own things. Well, of course, that's a problem. It's a problem for them, it's a problem for us. Because if we see people from Eretz Yisrael going to the movies, for example, on Yontif, it doesn't look right.
Isn't the minute common that if you stay in one place for more than 3 days, you automatically...
There is such an opinion, but it's not necessarily followed by everybody. That's the problem. Yeah, it definitely is. Right. Because we say that a person who stays 30 days in a place, he accepts upon himself as if he were a resident of that place already. That's correct.
Went to the mezuzah, right?
Yeah.
So one can leave 30 days without mezuzah.
Yeah, correct. But the 30 days, you have to put it up by then. Yeah. Okay.
Same thing with like the Dusan, if you use a different Dusan, the congregation is saying, what did you show?
Okay. Yeah, the correct thing would be if, for example, you daven, let's say you daven Nisachar Shanas, and you go in into a place where they daven Nisachar, the Nisachari, or something like that, then when it comes to Kedusha, you should say the one that they're saying. But vice versa. A person who davens Nisachari privately, right, for himself, when he comes into a shul where they daven Nisachar Shanas, he should say the Kedusha that we say. Huh? Yeah, I know. Look, you'll always find people who refuse to do it. Okay, I'm not talking about it. But I'm talking about what they should be doing. I'm not talking about what they do. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so we've established a very important principle that what? Devarim amutarim. You may think that you're permitted to do something, right? But v'acheim nagaben isur. But others say that, you know, others are, they conduct themselves that it is prohibited, right? Then you have to observe what it is. Okay. And the Gemara continues and it says, the Asrei the Rebbe, Lei Nahug, right? So we have to say that in Rebbe's place, they did not observe what? The prohibition against doing work, right? But we have to say what? That where Rav lived there, they did observe that on Purim you don't do any work. Okay? So far we have two different ideas. Now, the Gemara now comes and says maybe that's not what it was. Maybe it was a slightly different story. Okay? The Ebay say more, the Gemara says, and if you wish, you can say, or you can explain it as follows. It says, the Olam Nahug. No question that Rabbi also observed what? As a normal rule, not to do any work on Purim, right? Not to do any milach, not to do any work on Purim. But in this particular case, in this particular case, we see that Rabbi, he was planting a special planting for joyousness. So in other words, since Purim is a day of Simcha, you understand? So that therefore his planting was also for a simcha. Those of us who were here yesterday, we know that Rabbi Tzairi was trying to explain something about binyan shel simcha and netiyah shel simcha, if you remember. Okay? This was his discussion between Mincha and Maariv yesterday. Okay? And he defined that the binyan shel simcha is if you build something that is not necessary, but you're doing it as a luxury, then that should not be done when? In the period, you know, during the 3 weeks, right? And what about the Tiyah Shal Simcha? So he defined that, you know, that if you're planting something which is not necessary to be planted, then in that case, I mean, that would be it. Okay. Well, of course, the Gemara in Tainis already has mentioned these things, and this is now the quotation that they're going to bring from the Gemara in Tainis. Okay? All right. What is the quotation? Kinnitnan. We learned in the Mishnah, and it says as follows. Obru elu v'nanu nimatim b'masa umaton b'vinyan v'natiyah b'irisim nisuin. Okay. We learned, remember, in the Gemara in Tainis, that they instituted fast days if there wasn't any rainfall, right? And they had a series that they went through. The earlier ones, they had very few restrictions, but just, you know, they had special prayers, special fasting, and so on. But if time went on and still there was no rain, then in that case, they would begin to have even more restrictions in order to try to pray to the Beda Shalalim, you know, with broken hearts, you know, that he should bring rain to the people. Okay, so if the earlier fast had passed by, right, over, the Lona knew, and still their prayers for rain had not been answered. So what do they do then? Mimatim mimasamatan. First of all, they cut down on their business affairs. Okay? They cut down the binyan of inatiyah. They cut down also on building and on planting. And also they cut down on having, betrothals or engagements, as we would say, or marriages itself. Okay? Here we're not even talking about the 3 weeks, you understand. But as you can see, some of the restrictions that we have during the 3 weeks are already based upon what we see over here, the Gemara, the citation from Tinus, Gemara Tinus, okay? All right. The Tana law, and in connection with that, we learned that what is binyan? What do we mean by binyan? By building? So he says, binyan shel simcha. This is building which is meant simply to provide simcha. And as we said, we defined it, or as Rabbi Saidi defined it yesterday, he defined it as something that you don't need, but you feel that you want to live a nicer home, have a more luxurious surroundings, whatever it may be. This is binyan shel simcha. And what is netiyah? Netiyah shel simcha. So he says, "Ezeu binyan shel simcha." He says, "Zeh habune beis chasonis lido." He gives an example. Somebody who builds a house for his son's chasana to take place. This is a binyan shel simcha. "Ezeu netiyah shel simcha." What is planting, which we say is netiyah shel simcha? He says, "Zeh netiyah." This is a person who plants, as Rashi explains, this would be like rows of trees in order to give shade, because the kings would do that in order that they should be able to promenade and enjoy the shade. You understand? So that therefore this is not necessary. I mean, this is not the tia where it's necessary, let's say, to plant in order to have food to eat. But this is something, just for, it should be nice, okay? So that is prohibited during that time. And of course, as I say, this applies to 3 weeks as well. Okay. So, now that we've talked about Rabbi, we come back again to where it says that Chizkiyah, Kori b'Tveria, Chizkiyah, remember, read the Megillah in Tveria, Bar Beisav HaChamesha, right? On the 14th and the 15th of Adar. So the question is, right? Olam. He was in doubt as to whether Tveria was a city which was surrounded by a wall already in the days of Yeshua bin Nun or not. So now, the Gemara says, is there any question at all about Tveria? The Hawksiv, don't we have a quotation in Yehoshua itself, in the book of Joshua, where it's written, the Yore Mitzar, the following are cities which are fortified, right? And obviously, if it's fortified, it means what? It means that it has to have a wall around it, right? Hatzidim, Tzer, Hamas, Rakas, Bekideris. Okay? All these different places that are mentioned over there. The Kaim alone, and we have a tradition which says that what is Rakas? He says Rakas Utaveria, okay? That where it says Rakas, this is what we later call Tveria, right? So the Gemara says, Hainu Taman Misap Galei, so why should Chizkiyah have been in doubt when we have this tradition which says that it was a walled city? So he had his doubts because of a different reason. He says, Mishum dechad kiso shura de yamahalas. Because one side of Tveria, the wall is not a wall, but what is it? It's the Yam. It's the Yam Kinneret, right? What we call the Sea of Galilee, if you wish. But we call it Kinneret, all right? So he says, Ihochi amai misapkele. If that's the case, so why should it be in doubt? Vadai lav chaymahi. A sea is not a wall. Certainly it's not a wall, right? Ditanya, as we've learned, and this of course goes back again to how do we define what's a walled city, what's an unwalled city, and how does it play out as far as various dinim are concerned. Well, that goes back to the end, if you remember, Bahar. Okay? Parsha Bahar, where they speak about if it's a walled city, right, then in that particular case, if you sell real estate, then in that particular case, it could be a permanent transaction, okay? If, on the other hand, it is an open city, in other words, an unwalled city, then in that case we say, it's to be considered as if it were an open field, and in that particular case, then what should happen? Then it goes back in Yovel to, the original owner of it, okay? So, if that's the case, the pasuk there says, Asher lo chomor, right? We're talking about a city which has a wall. And they say, you know what the pasuk also implies? It says, below shur igor, soviv. Below shur igor. And it means, and not a wall which consists not really of a wall, but simply houses bunched together, one on top of the other, right? So that it resembles like a wall. Literally, it's a wall made of roofs. This is the literal meaning, okay? But what does it mean? It means that, you know, the houses are right one next to another, so that it gives you the impression that it is a wall, but it's not really a wall. What does the word Soviv mean? All around it says Prata Tveria. So this would exclude Tveria, Sheyama Chamasa, because there the sea is its wall. So he says, the Inyam Botayore Chaymor Le Misapkale. He says, all right. He had no doubts when it came as to whether the rules of real estate that we mentioned a moment ago would apply over there, because, you know, is it walled or not? But he comes up, but he had his doubts as to whether Le'inyan, when it came to Mikra Megillah, the reading of Megillah. Why? Because my Perazim or my Mekafim. Right? What do we mean by when the Megillah says that the Perazim, in other words, those who live in unwalled places, and what do we mean by those who lived in walled places? That is written in the Tzivik Mikra Megillah, right? That are written in the reading of the Megillah. He says, Mishum dahane migle vahane le migle. He says, the answer is because the open people, right, they are literally revealed. In other words, there's no protection shielding them, right? The honey lay miglin, but the honey. So shum the honey miglin, the honey lay miglin. Right. The honame and others, you know, are not shielded. In other words, even if they're in the walled city, they are shielded, right? But if they are in an unwalled city, then they are revealed, right? The honame, but Tveria too, he says miglin. It's open. It's revealed. Why? Because you can always come in how? Through the water, through the sea over there, right? Oh, Dilmo, but maybe you thought, maybe the Shimdahani Migdahan Migdahani, some are protected and others are not protected. The Hotname Migdia, but the, actually, maybe the water is really like a shield preventing armies from coming in and attacking, you know, from that particular direction. So Mishimachi Bisapkale. So this is the reason why he was in doubt. Alright, do a couple of more lines over here to the end of the page, okay? Rav Atzi Kari Megillah Behutzal. Alright, Rav Atzi read the Megillah in the Hutzal, and he also read it Bar Beis of Achamesa, right, on the 14th and also on the 15th. So he says, Bisapkale, because he was also in doubt about that particular city, Imu Kefes Chomim Moshe Yeshua Ben Nunhi Ilom. He was in doubt as to whether that was a city which was walled in the days of Yeshua Ben Nun or not. Iko di Omar, there are those who say, Omar Rav Asi, that Rav Asi said as follows. I mean, the same Rav Asi that we spoke about now, that the Hutzel, he says, Hi Hutzel, maybe Hutzel, he says, maybe he says Hutzal is a city which belongs to the tribe of Binyamin, right? And maybe it was walled also in the days of Yeshua. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, so what Rabbi Yochanan said, he Avina Talya, he says, when we were young kids, Amina Milso de Shidna de Savia. So I said something, I asked my elders the following question. I'll just do orally right now. Vishtakach Chamasi, and I found out that there was an agreement with me that what? That Chamas zu Tveria, that Chamas is Tveria. Veloma Nikro Shmo Chamas. Why is it called Chamas? Al Shum Chame Tveria. Because Tveria contains hot water, hot springs. Okay, all right, we'll stop at this particular point. Next week, Mr. Shem, I'll repeat the last sentence again. Tonight is the 18th of the month of July in the year 2001, and we're continuing now on the top of Dab Vav, Omid Aleph, in Maseches Megillah. As we heard the last few minutes of last week's lesson, the problem is that it's based on a question that was raised in the Mishnah. The Mishnah wanted to know, right, which cities read on the 15th of Adar and not on the 14th. So we saw that in that case, it has to be a city which was walled at the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. So that's why they've been trying to identify various places that are mentioned in Yehoshua, but to try to identify them with later names and to see whether it was, you know, this place or not. With Tveria, if you remember from the bottom of the last one, so they said, first of all, that Tveria, they said, is Rakas. Now along comes Rabbi Yochanan, and he says, no, Tveria is not Rakas, but it is Chamas. So in other words, the question is, with which place in Yehoshua do we identify it? Of course, also last week we learned why we had a question about Tveria, because of the fact, you know, that it faces the Yam Kinneret, and therefore there is no wall on the Yam side. So the question is, does that make it like an ordinary city, open, in other words, prosim, as we would say? Or do we say that the sea serves as a protecting wall, in which case, so because of the doubt, so we saw that already in Tveria there were those who read both nights, both days of the Purim, both the 14th and the 15th, that in Hutzal is another place where they did it, and we now see that over here on the top of Davol Omid Aleph, that Rabbi Anderson, yeah, Jews of Rabbi Yochanan, says that, matter of fact, he says Tveria is not Rakas, but what is it? It's Chamas. So why is it called Chamas? So he said because it has the famous Chame Tveria, in other words, the hot springs of Tveria, which already was something that, you know, the Talmud was concerned with as far as Hilchos Shabbos is concerned. Because the question is, are you allowed to cook in the hot water of Tveria or not, and so on and so forth. Okay, so that was a problem, okay. But nevertheless, as we see, the hot springs have been there for more than 2,000 years in existence, and... They still have them, even today. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, if we say, according to Rabbi Yochanan, right, that Chamas is Tveria, so now we have to give a different identification for Rakas. So what's Rakas? Which we said before was Tveria, now we say, no, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's not. So he says, okay, Rakas zu Tzipori. He says, Rakas is the city of Tzipori. Tzipori, in English we call Sepphoris, and it's in the northern Galilee. As you head really... towards the Mediterranean, but in the Galilee. Okay? And the question is, Loma Nikro Shmo Rakos, so why do they call its name Rakos? Because remember, the name Rakos and Chamas, these are names in the book of Yehoshua, right? But they're trying, as I said a moment ago, to identify later place names with the earlier ones, okay? So I said, it's called Rakos, Mishum de Mendalia Kirakasa de Nahara. Says because it is raised, medallion in this case means raised, like a rakso de nahara. Rashi explains that rakso means like you know, when you have a stream of water, so naturally you have banks, and the banks are raised from it, so that therefore this also was raised above other areas, so it's a high spot in the mountains of Galilee. Okay, those who have traveled to Eretz Israel, hopefully everybody has, and if you haven't, you got to go, remember. Okay,
if you accept that concept, then there are many places
which are high,
have a raised around it.
Right. Okay, I don't say no. The point is, actually, you're right from one respect. First of all, as you know, there is the Galil HaTachton and there's the Galil HaElyon. There is Lower Galilee and there is Upper Galilee. And Upper Galilee, which is that part of Galilee as it heads towards the Lebanese border, is actually higher in altitude than Lower Galilee. Okay. The highest place in Eretz Israel is, no, not Tzfat, but near Tzfat, Mount Meron, which is right there. Right, okay. And of course, Meron is also the place where you have the kever of Shimon ben Yochai, his son, and so on and so forth. And it's one of the places of pilgrimage that you go to. And particularly, this is the focus of the celebration when it comes to Lag BaOmer. Right. Okay.
Mount Hermon is not part of the...
Well, Mount Hermon is really on the border. Part of it is Eretz Israel, part of it is Syria, part of it is Lebanon. Okay.
But according to the water...
Lebanon is Syrian, in effect. Today it's Lebanon, but...
Syria. Politically there's no question. I mean, who rules Lebanon? The answer
originally
is the Syrians, right. Okay.
No, but originally it was Syria.
No.
After World War I it became Lebanon.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, because they wanted to have... you know, this one went to France, this one came to England, and I say it's Gagangan, you know, right. All right. Now, as long as they are identifying places, so they come to Kinneret, okay? What about Kinneret? So it says Zuganosa. It says, this is what is also called Genosa, okay? Veloma Nikro Shmo Kinneret. So why did they call Genosa Kinneret? He says, Demesike Peiro Kikola De Chinre, I says, because he says that the fruit of that particular region is as sweet as the sound of a violin. Okay? Harp, violin, whatever you want to say. Right, yeah. Kinneret, you know, is related to the word kinor in Hebrew. Kinor. Kinor today in modern Hebrew is a violin. Whether it was a violin back in the old days is already a different story. Maybe it was more like a harp or something like that, okay? But, you know, when you read, for example, every day we recite, you know, Psalm 150, right? So we know the sounding of the shofar, we praise God with the navel, and the chinor, and the question of what are they? So, Minim the Ugov, Minim they say that this is stringed instruments. The Ugov doesn't mean the organ, but it's also some kind of a...
What is harp? Harp.
A harp?
Is that upright?
You know, this is the harp.
Yeah, I know what it is, but isn't it, it's the, what's the difference of the harp?
Well, some say that the original name, actually the kinnor was a harp.
That's
others say they're right.
That's
yeah.
what I thought.
Yeah. But others say that it wasn't. I mean, maybe it was the navel. Maybe it was the minim. I don't know. I mean,
today
got
more violin and so on.
Right. Okay.
All right.
There are books that have been written about ancient music, and they try to identify this. There was a man who was a professor at Hebrew Union College many years ago, and he taught Jewish music. His name was Edelson. He wrote a couple of books that are considered classics on Jewish music, but as I say, these books are old, you know, and since then people have other theories as to what they are. Okay.
What's the word klezmer? Is that just the type of music?
Klezmer, I'll tell you.
Type of music, or is it
to be exact, the word is really klezmer, which means musical instruments. That's all it means, klezmer, okay? However, in Yiddish it became klezmer, okay? A person was a klezmer, or you heard a klezmer group, or something like that, okay? Now, the type of music that they were playing in Eastern Europe at weddings became identified with class bear. Okay, so that's the answer.
So Zemiras was kind of
believed. Zemiras? Yeah, Zemiras means songs, literary, or you want to call them table hymns or something like that. Yes, Zemiras, right. But they're songs that we sing on Shabbos in order to honor the Shabbos, the fielding, the presence of the Shekhinah when we sit down at our table on Shabbos. Okay, so Kinneret, then we say this is Genoser, and why did they call Genoser Kinneret? The answer is because the fruit of that area, and by the way, the Talmud mentions again in other areas too, that the fruits of Genoser are exceptionally sweet and delicious to the taste. So there is sweet